Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle. I cannot believe I did it again. I started our nationally syndicated program with a take on the Jacksonville Jaguars, and it was a positive one. I'm talking about Jalen Ramsey. You have to check that. The Bulls might be 2-7, but Bobby Portis was back on the court making his season debut, and he lit it up. And apparently, his Bull teammates are behind him and not Nick Mirotic, the one who's got the broken face. And we started to work on a new weapon in the jungle, the Twitter hammer, because Twitter may have gone to 280 characters, but we're staying at 140. Also, three excellent guests, Redskins linebacker Will Compton, CBS Sports' Dennis Dodd, and Tennessee Titans safety Kevin Byard. Alvin, go get it. I can't believe I'm going to do this. Another day, though, and I'm going to start this program with a take on the Jacksonville Jaguars. I never thought that that would happen. I can't believe how many times I've started this show with the Jags take, and I'm happy about it. And notice, like back in the day, you'd probably say, if he's doing that, then he's coming for him. He's going to crack them. It's not like that anymore. Not only do I start this show, this nationally syndicated program, with a take on Jacksonville from the middle of Southern California, a lot of times it's positive. Things have really changed there. And here's where I'm going with this. The NFL announced earlier this week that A.J. Green will not be suspended for that fight with Jacksonville corner Jalen Ramsey. But that has not stopped everybody from wondering exactly what it was that set Green off. What could possibly have been said that would turn one of the most chill guys in the NFL into a body-slamming, head-punching machine? Was it personal? Was it about his family? Ramsey must have crossed the line somehow, right? But Ramsey met with the media yesterday, and my man was rolling. First off, he wants you to know one thing. He did not talk about families. He did, however, bring the truth. He brought 65 seconds of absolute straight fire.
I locked receivers down. Physically and then mentally, I get in my mind. Get under their skin. I talk my talk. Whatever I'm going to say. It's rumors out there that I said, like, some deep, personal stuff. I'm going to let y'all know that's not true, off rip. I get out there. I do my thing. I talk I don't go personal. I don't talk about nobody. Wife, nobody, kids, nobody, family. I don't do that.
All right, so now we got that cleared up. There was no mention of wives, kids, or families. Quote, I don't do that. All right, so what do you do? What did he say? Ramsey was only too happy to tell you that.
I told him almost every play that he was weak, that he was soft. That demonstrate facts. He just couldn't handle the truth. It was facts. Told him that his time almost up.
Quote, I told him almost every play that he was weak, that he was soft. Them is straight facts. He just couldn't handle the truth. I told him that his time was almost up. End quote. So as incredible as that fight was, those four sentences might have been even better. Can I repeat that? I told him almost every play that he was weak, that he was soft. Them is straight facts. He just couldn't handle the truth. I told him that his time was almost up. Weak, soft, after nearly every single play, and then telling the media that, quote, them is straight facts. Amazing. Now, my favorite part of this is a second-year corner telling a wideout who's on pace for his sixth 1,000-yard season in 7 years that, quote, his time is almost up. And the delivery is even better than the words themselves. You see, Ramsey's not angry or fired up or belligerent or passionate when he says this to reporters. He's saying it in the same exact tone that you'd say, sky is blue, water is wet. In other words, he wasn't saying that Green is weak or soft to get under his skin. He was saying it because he believes it. Quote, them is facts. And what about that push? What about that push from Ramsey that started the fight? Ramsey wants to correct that for the record as well.
I was just out there spitting facts to him. I mean, I pushed him every single play. We can go back and look at the film. I pushed him every single play. I told him, stop putting his hand on me. And it's a run play. Don't even put your hand on me.
All right, so he pushed him on every single play. So why did Green fall on that last push? Well, Ramsey's got a theory on that too. Quote, he just fell because he's weak. It wasn't a late push. The whistle hadn't blown yet. I wasn't going to get flagged for that push. No flags came out until he grabbed me. At the end of the day, I took it. And yes, I was hot because I got kicked out and I wanted my money's worth. If I knew I was going to be kicked out, I would have fought back easily. But then ultimately, as brutal as a verbal beatdown as that was, Ramsey does understand where Green is coming from. I mean, Ramsey does get that part of it. Quote, if I was a receiver and I had to line up against myself, I would try to figure out the easiest route to get off the field too. End of quote. Boom! That's fire. Like, I'm so good that if I had to line up across from me, I would try to get kicked out too. I mean, there aren't enough mic drops or explosions for that line, or really for his entire rant. But the best thing about that is it's not a rant. It's just some guy talking to the media in the most matter-of-fact way and absolutely tearing apart one of the best receivers in the game. So Jalen Ramsey, keep being you. Keep doing your thing. Keep spitting facts. Keep being you. And I'll keep leading this show with Jacksonville Jaguar takes. Something I thought that I would never do. And there's another one for you. I told him almost every play that he was weak, he was soft, them is straight facts, he couldn't handle the truth. I told him that his time was almost up.
Told him that his time almost up.
It's not. It's not. His time is not almost up. Still a very effective receiver. Still a physical receiver. In fact, I'm not sure I agree with anything of what he said. I just know I love what he said. He's weak? I wouldn't say that. AJ Green is soft? I wouldn't say that. AJ Green's time is almost up. That's clearly not true. But there's Jalen Ramsey doing Jalen Ramsey. Will Compton is my guest. Will, it's good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, good to hear from you, man. I'm happy to be on here.
Good to have you back, Will. Thank you. Hey, Will, every week is important in the NFL, obviously. But when you drop two straight the way the team had before Sunday's game, what was the mindset going into that game, and did it feel like a must win?
It certainly felt like a must win. You know, our coach, our leadership preached that you don't necessarily want to preach must win, but we knew our backs were coming into this week because, you know, the way our schedule set up, we're playing a lot of division leaders in the future and things like that. We knew we needed a win to get some momentum rolling.
Now, Will, your pregame ritual has been known to include several strong references to the Catalina wine mixer. When you go out and you ball up the way you did against Seattle, how satisfying is it, and does it feel like going out there and dominating the biggest helicopter leasing event in the Western Hemisphere since 1997?
What was that? Sorry, I lost you for a second. You said it's a Catalina wine mixer.
Yeah, it's
and
part...
then you said what?
Does it feel, when you go out there and you play the way you did and dominate the way you did, does it feel like dominating the biggest helicopter leasing event in the Western Hemisphere since 1997?
Yeah, man. Every game, I like to, you know, go out and have fun. A few of us, myself, Ryan Kerrigan, several of us like to just shout random movie quotes and things that just kind of, I don't know, be a little ridiculous before the game, just to have fun with it, man. And you know, that won't ever change. I'll continue to try to, you know, make everyone laugh every now and then, and just have a good time while I'm out there.
That's great. That's a lot of fun. Now, that's not to say that you're not very serious about what you do. When you and I talked last year, we talked about how much time you spend on the mental and psychological side of the game and of life itself. In fact, back in March, you tweeted that you came across some goals that you had written down on July 8th, 2013. So what kind of thoughts did you have when you look back on those goals and how far you've come since then?
Oh, man, it was an emotional time looking back and seeing those things written down. Just because it kind of reminded me of, you know, that the power of vision and belief and just the whole process of everything. And it just proves to me, you know, every day that, you know, you become what you think about. You become what you repeatedly do. And, you know, just having that vision for yourself and that process and those daily habits, man, how everything comes full circle. So that reminder that I had just, you know, I obviously shared it, you know, through my Twitter and Instagram to the world that, you know, my belief in the law of attraction and things of that nature. And, you know, to this day, man, how things kind of came full circle again and, you know, facing some adversity and things like that, and just coming out and continuing to work, having your head down and then being ready for your opportunity.
Clones, I need a moment so I can talk to you about stamps.com. Listen, these days, you can get practically everything on demand, such as our podcast. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. So let me ask you, why are you still going to the post office and dealing with their limited hours when you can get postage on demand with Stamps.com? Anything that you can do at the post office, you can now do right from your desk. As an example, the holidays are coming up. My wife, Janet, is all about the Christmas card. We send out hundreds, literally hundreds of Christmas cards, and there's no way we could do it without Stamps.com. I'm going to print my own postage. I'm going to do it when I want and do it at home. Trust me, with the holidays coming up, you should do the exact same thing, and you'll thank me for it. Go to Stamps.com, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in jungle. That's Stamps.com, enter jungle for a special, special offer. A four-week trial, which includes postage and a digital scale. Do not wait. You want to go to Stamps.com, and before you do anything else, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in jungle. That's Stamps.com, enter jungle. Stamps.com, never go to the post office ever again. I know I won't. That's Stamps.com. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Will Compton joining us. I think it says a lot about you that you're willing to share that in a screenshot. I mean, you open yourself up. And then one of the things, Will, you said was the old comp that wore Jersey 46 had a weak haircut, feared to fail, and stressed daily about, quote, making it. So what do you remember about the old comp? And then how is the 2017 comp who wears 51 different from the old one? And then how is that haircut now? Bring me up to date.
Well, the haircut, man, I discovered a nice tight fade, and I wish I would have had it back in college because college would have probably been a little bit more fun for me. But as far as the old comp versus the new, man, probably just the confidence. You know, again, being vulnerable and putting things out there. I remember sitting with my mentor and kind of writing those goals down that I reflected on and him telling me, you know, writing down I am a starting linebacker for the Washington Redskins and being that kid back in 2013, being an undrafted guy, you're just thinking, in the back of my mind, no matter what I wrote down and thought and tried speaking to myself into existence, there's still that guy in the back of my head thinking, you know, it probably wouldn't work out with the Redskins. Hopefully, I have good film that another team will pick me up for a second and give me a good look and stuff like that. So kind of just having that, you know, not having that confidence yet. And then, you know, once you get on practice squad all year long, you're kind of making things happen. Coaches are kind of saying something to them. That next year, hey, you have a shot. Team, I end up starting a few games and playing pretty damn well, and it just goes to show, getting yourself vulnerable, getting yourself out of that comfort zone. That's where you grow, and that's where, you know, everything builds for you. No matter how fearful you are of what others might think, that you believe in yourself. As long as you believe it, it doesn't really matter what anybody else thinks, unless you live in that world about external factors, kind of, you know, manipulating you certain ways. If you just stay focused on what you have written, on what you are focused on and everything like that, you know, things eventually work out some form or fashion. If it doesn't necessarily work out in that area, the character you're building will work itself out. You'll know how to, you know, adapt, improvise, and overcome and find another area that, you know, you'll carry yourself to be successful in.
Will Compton, my guest. Will, I know you have to go, but before you do, at that time when you were trying to get this done, you were writing down your vision, you were trying to make that team, is it true you were dealing with a hamstring injury and that you would duct tape it so you could keep playing without the trainers knowing about it? And if that's true, what was that experience like?
It was a downtime because I remember when it happened. It happened in a one-on-one rep. I kind of felt my upper hamstring kind of pull. I didn't think much of it. You know, they kind of just told me it was a sprain. I wasn't really known as anybody. I remember our head trainer, we laugh about it now because I'm close with all the trainers now, but the head trainer, not really. He's like, Will, who? And, you know, the guy I stayed close to, I named him Dr. Evil. He was my kind of trainer that I was close with when I was going through that whole time period. You know, I just kind of told him on the side, hey, don't let anybody know. I need to practice. I remember getting out of bed, not being able to really walk well, and kind of getting out of practice a little bit, or not practice, but the walkthrough. We had done everything we can to kind of, you know, quote unquote, duct tape it as far as spider tape, wrapping it, another wrap over it, certain shorts to wear so I couldn't really lift my leg. And, you know, I remember still going out to practice. And I actually had like two interceptions that practice and everything. And that's when I started to actually kind of get some recognition with Coach Shanahan on being like a ball hawk and things. And I just remember that moment being one of kind of my defining moments through this journey, you know, overcoming and fighting through that adversity. I mean, it was still a painful process throughout the rest of the year, but I came to find out that I kind of tore it a little bit at the insertion point. And, you know, it's just crazy to reflect back on those things and just kind of, you know, putting my head down and just continuing to work no matter how dark the time was. Because I remember wanting to kind of not caring if I made the team or hang it up after that goes on, because so much goes through your head. You know, you're an undrafted guy and you're getting hurting your hamstring and this and the other. And, you know, I remain to stay close with the trainer, tried not to get too much information. So they just cut me and bring somebody else in. And I don't know, it just all worked out, man.
Another night, another forgettable stat line from Laker youngster Lonzo Ball, and another morning full of lava takes that this kid is a big bust. We're 11 games into the season, and this is already the most tired overreaction ever. It's not even that I'm here to defend Lonzo. I'm just not about to write off some freakish talent because he's not Kyrie Irving yet. I'm not that dumb, and I'm not that short-sighted, and I've been around long enough to know you do not bury the second overall pick after only 11 games. It doesn't take Dr. Phil to know why everybody is so jacked up to kill this kid. It's because they hate his dad. They hate the hype man. And every time Lonzo clanks one off the iron, some deep-down feeling of resentment towards LeVar is validated. Listen, you can hate on the old man all you want. I'm not here to tell you how to feel, but I am here to tell you that calling Lonzo Ball Greg Oden less than a month into his rookie season is about the dumbest take on the planet right now. It's tired, it's weak, it's dead wrong. Just stop doing it. Dennis Dodd is back. Dennis, good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, I am good. I apologize for missing out. I was at Notre Dame that day on campus.
No worries at all, Dennis. Great to have you back. I'll take it whenever I can get it. Let me start with Alabama. Dennis, they're number two. They beat number 19 LSU 24-10 Saturday night. But when you look at how Alabama showed up in that game, Dennis, and the injuries they have right now, how concerned would you be if you're Nick Saban?
I'm concerned. I think he's concerned. He kind of voiced it after the game. He said it was a costly win for us. They lost, you know, two outside backers in the opener against Florida State. And then they lose two against LSU, Sean Dion Hamilton, who is kind of a glue guy, one of their better veteran players, to a knee. And then Mac Wilson, his backup at the same position. So, yeah, I mean, you wonder how much depth Alabama has. They probably deeper than anyone in the country. I never got the feeling LSU was going to win the game Saturday, but I was impressed how they played, and they were a competent quarterback away from making that a one-score game in the second half.
You know, Dennis, one more thought about Alabama. You made the point that in the lead-up to that game against LSU that they don't have that bell cow back that they usually have. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Oh, it just is at Alabama. Nick's been doing that for years, just doing the tailback by committee. The difference this year is that they have five of them. Brian Robinson, the number five guy, is a freshman out of Tuscaloosa. He could start for a lot of teams. Obviously, they've got Damian Harris, Bo Scarborough, Josh Jacobs. These are guys that could rush for 1,500 yards as a starter at other schools. But Nick, like a lot of NFL teams, does it by committee, and he tells them, you know, look, you're going to get to the NFL with low mileage. It's not about getting 30 carries. It's what you do in the 10 or 15 you do get, and that's going to help you when you get to the next level. And it's worked out great. This is the best rushing team, Jim, that Nick's had at Alabama. LSU held them 147 yards below their average, but it is pretty competent.
Dennis Dodd, a national college football writer for CBSSports.com. All right, Dennis, Saturday we've got Auburn at number one Georgia on CBS. Auburn's coming off a comfortable win over Texas A&M. How big of a problem do they pose for Georgia?
Well, this is huge. Georgia hasn't played much of anyone since beating Notre Dame. This is their whole season right here. And the key to beating Georgia, which hasn't really even come close to happening yet, is making the true freshman, Jake Fromm, get into a third and seven. Make him beat you with his arm. He hasn't had to because the defense is very good and the running game's been very good. I have a suspicion that Auburn will get him in that position where he has to win or has to make plays for them to win the game. And I think that's the key to that game. On the other side, Gus Malzahn, in the same month, has been on the hot seat, could get fired, could leave on his own for Arkansas, could win the SEC, and could get Auburn to the playoffs. All those things could happen in
right.
The next 3 weeks.
Dennis, go back to Jake Fromm for a minute. I mean, everybody keeps waiting for the Georgia freshman to have a game where he plays like a freshman. But at this point, is there a possibility that he's not going to have that clunker?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, that's what I keep writing. I'm waiting for him to have that clunker where he goes 9-for-21 with three turnovers, two interceptions, and a fumble. And it just hasn't happened. You know, 16 out of 22 last week, I think, against South Carolina. They manage him well. I know that's a loaded label, game manager. In this case, it's perfect. And they've got a backup there, an embarrassment of riches, Jim, at quarterback. Obviously, Eason. And then they've got the number one player, not the number one quarterback, the number one player in the country coming in, Justin Fields, a quarterback out of Kennesaw, Georgia. That would suggest that somebody or two is going to have to transfer.
Dennis Dodds, my guest. All right, you mentioned that you were in South Bend earlier in the week. Notre Dame is number three in the college football playoff ranking. What is the mood like around the program right now?
It's steady. Steady as she goes. Everybody our age wants to make it, Catholics versus convicts. I call this one Catholics versus comebacks because Miami's won four games by 8 points or less. I don't know if they realize what they're getting into, what they're coming down to in South Florida. It's going to be sold out at Hard Rock. Those people are going to be wanting blood. And Notre Dame's defense, I keep coming back to the fact they gave up 700 yards last week to Wake. Now, they won the game handily, and Brian Kelly said, well, we were just scoreboard watching in the second half. I think that's the way you get at Notre Dame right now. You hammer them. Miami's front seven is very good, but Malik Rozier has gotten better every week to me. So I think that's going to be Notre Dame's soft spot if it does have one.
You know, Dennis, one more thought about that. We're not there yet, but Notre Dame does not have a conference championship game, of course. So if they win out, what does that mean for the college football playoff, and what would that mean for the other conferences if Notre Dame does get in?
Yeah, I wrote about that yesterday. You know, at 11-1, I think they're in, but I can't tell you if Wisconsin's going to be sitting there at 13-0, having not played much of anyone. Or if Georgia or Alabama both stay in the top four, and Notre Dame not playing that 13th game, that 13th data point that everybody else does except Notre Dame because they all have championship games. So I think the biggest thing will be on that last Saturday, December 2nd, if Notre Dame's in the running, it'll be moving day for everybody else but them. They'll be on the couch by the SEC championship game, the Big Ten championship game. And will that, I guess the term is, will they still be in the minds of the selection committee when that happens? I can't answer that question.
All right, now you've had a few days to think about this topic. Would you like to take a shot at explaining how Ohio State could lose to Iowa 55-24?
Nope, I can't. After the week before, we'd anointed JT Barrett the Heisman favorite, and it turns out they had one good quarter against Penn State. But it was one good quarter against Penn State. That seemed to define their season. They were going to win the Big Ten. I did talk to one coach who told me he was really impressed from another school, who said he was really impressed with Brian Ferentz's play calling at Iowa. If there's a way to explain 55-24, I don't know if there is, that Iowa went away from its tendencies. It threw more on first down. And when it got snowballing, it caught Ohio State off guard, and they're out of the playoff, maybe still playing for a Big Ten title, but I wouldn't call anybody there would call this season a success after that.
Now, Dennis, right? And then look at the conference. It was not that long ago that we were talking about how loaded the Big Ten was when it came to coaches, and then it was only a matter of time before they started dominating college football. Now we're talking about the possibility that the Big Ten might be left out of the playoff. What has happened in that conference?
I think just what we said, just those upsets. You know, Penn State losing after a 3.5-hour weather delay at Michigan State. And all of a sudden, maybe what you thought were your two best teams have two losses and they're out of it. And the whole conference's entire chance of getting in the playoff hangs by a thread of Wisconsin. Basically, what Wisconsin has to win out and take its chances. And I think it'll be in, but if it loses, I think the Big Ten's done.
Dennis, one thought before you go. I've got to ask you about Iowa State. I love Iowa State, and I love what Matt Campbell's doing there. I mean, they are coming off a tough loss at West Virginia, But the fact that we're talking about Iowa State having a tough loss on the road to West Virginia is amazing in and of itself when you consider where they were at this time last year. How do you explain Matt Campbell coming in and turning this thing around as quickly as he has?
It's not very sexy, Jim. I was there last week. It's just steady and take a very calm approach. This is a guy who was at Toledo for 5 years and won less than 9 one time. They play really good defense. We saw what they did. No one can explain, and this is why college football is so great, no one can explain the third-string walk-on Kyle Kemp coming in and beating Oklahoma. He was the best quarterback they had. Who would have thought that? And their starting quarterback from last year, Joel Lanning, being their middle linebacker and their best defensive player. No one can explain that. But I think one of the things that happened there, Jim, was that he brought his entire staff en masse from Toledo to Iowa State. You know, sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad, but they're from the same region. They know how to recruit. They know how to work together. And Matt Campbell's just a really solid, good football coach, you know, and we'll see how long he lasts, but I don't think that's the story now. I think the story's just enjoying the ride.
I agree with you, but how long is he going to last? To your point, he had that track record at Toledo. He's turned around Iowa State. The expectation is there's going to be a number of significant job openings in the offseason. Can you see him moving on, or do you think that he's going to be at Iowa State for the long haul?
I can't because less is a point that there really isn't anything that fits him this offseason than the fact that he's got a $9.4 million buyout, which is prohibitive. And if somebody's going to pay that, you're doing it for a guy that's been at Iowa State 2 years. Obviously Toledo for 5, but Iowa State for 2. I don't know if Florida, Tennessee, A&M, Arkansas, or Nebraska fit him right now. I know he doesn't fit in the SEC. He's a Midwestern guy. I just, having known him a little bit, he wouldn't work in that culture. So I think just because of that Iowa State fans can breathe easier, at least this year.
Remember when Chicago Bull Bobby Portis caved in the face of teammate Nick Mirotic during a practice before the start of the season? Well, that story has not gone away. In fact, it has found a new level. Portis made his season debut on Tuesday night and came up huge, 21 points, 13 rebounds, and 4 assists off the bench. Meanwhile, according to the Chicago Sun-Times, teammates are siding with the puncher and not the punchee. Quote, according to several players, the ultimatum issued by Nick Mirotic, either Bobby Portis goes or he goes, carries no weight. If anything, it has solidified Portis' standing with his teammates, quote, end of quote. That can't feel very good. You get your face shattered, you miss the start of the season, you say it's either him or me, and your teammates say they'll go with the guy who shattered your face. I'm not there, I have no idea what it's like to be in that locker room or on the practice court, but how terrible must they see Nick as a teammate if somebody punches him in the face and the guys side with the guy doing the punching? Hearing that from your teammates has got to feel like another punch in the face and a kick in the junk. He was the 64th pick overall in 2016. Tennessee is at home against Cincinnati. Kevin Byard is my guest. Kevin, nice to have you on. How are you?
It's great to be here. How you doing, Jerome?
Good, Kevin. Great to have you on the show. Thanks so much. You had the 2 interceptions in the win over Baltimore, Kevin. You had 3 against Cleveland the game before that. So I got to ask, what was your mindset going into Sunday's game when it comes to picks? When you're as locked in as you are right now, are you fully expecting to get at least 1 against Baltimore the way you did?
I mean, to be honest, I went into the game, you know, actually trying to better my last performance. I always try to go into, you know, each game trying to better my last time out, you know, when I'm coming to practice trying to be better than the last day. So I'm always going to the game trying to better my performance. So, I mean, it's going to be the same thing with the Cincinnati game.
Kevin Byard, my guest. All right, so after that second interception, you and some of your teammates broke out a temptations dance. Where did the idea come from that, and then what do you make of the execution? Did you guys get it?
I mean, to be honest, it all starts in practice, you know. You know, the first person I always say something is Adore, because, you know, he's seeing the Steelers, he's seeing Juju Smith, his former teammate, doing all kinds of celebrations. So he's itching to try to do a group dance or something like that. And I think somehow in practice it just came up with temptations that we should do this 1-2 step. And then it went from there and then just went on and on. And we actually didn't get to finish the dance, but hopefully we'll have something else cooking up for us in a few weeks coming up.
I mean, Kevin, it's fun, right? It's so good that they loosen that up and you guys can do that. It's not a big thing, man. It's fun, right? It's good to have some emotion and have some fun. What's it like being out there and making plays and being able to celebrate it with your teammates?
I mean, it's extremely fun. You know, I always look at it like, I mean, when you're winning games and you're balling, you're playing good as a defense, you're going to want to have fun. You're going to want to, you know, your emotions kind of take over at some point. I think, you know, if you're not winning and you're losing and you score a touchdown and you're trying to make a big celebration, I think it's kind of selfish. But I like I said, when you're winning, it's always fun.
All right, so there's always that question, like when you've got a hot hand in basketball and you got to go with a heat check. Like if a guy hits a couple of threes in a row, you want to see, like, man, how hot am I? When you have five picks in the last two games, do you feel like you've got the hot hand when it comes to interceptions, or is the ball just finding you right now?
Yeah, I won't say it's a hot hand with interceptions at all. I think it's just I feel like I'm in kind of a zone right now. I'm not even talking just, you know, picking the ball off. When it comes to everything, just reading my keys, doing what I'm supposed to do, playing my technique, what I've been coached to do in practice, I just feel like I'm in kind of a zone right now where everything's just clicking right now.
All right, so is there a part of you that feels like opposing quarterbacks are testing you and they should know better, or are you fine with them trying to see if they can beat you?
Of course, I'm always fine with, you know, them keep trying me. I feel like with the amount of interceptions I had in college, you know, I would think that some quarterbacks would, you know, kind of know that, you know, this guy's a ball hawk, but, you know, I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to let the secret out. I'm just going to keep on playing my technique and picking the ball off. The ball's in the air.
I think they know, though. I think the secret's out. Kevin Byard, my guest.
Most definitely.
Now, Wesley Woodyard said of you, quote, "We knew he was going to be one of our best players, most dominant players." Brian Arakpo said, quote, "I've been around a lot of great players. He definitely has blossomed into one of those greats the way he's playing this year." I'm telling you, these are two vets with a ton of credibility in that game. So what's it mean to hear that kind of praise from those two guys?
Oh, it's amazing. I have a ton of respect for Brian Arakpo and Wesley Woodyard. You know, Wesley is a guy who's been a 10-year captain. He's been a captain ever since he's been in the league, even as a rookie. So I have a ton of respect for that guy especially. So to hear, you know, words come from him and Rack is definitely humbling.
Now, those two guys are not the only guys. Michael Griffin, who was a fixture at safety for the Titans for a long time, said, "I read articles about him studying safeties and trying to incorporate their game into his. But at the end of the day, he's right there at the next level. He's taken that next step in his second year. The sky's the limit for the kid." End quote. So who are some of the safeties that you studied on the way up? And what are the types of things that you do that you've learned from them?
So I would say, you know, not as far as studying, but the guys that I took my inspiration from, guys who I kind of wanted to model my game after a little bit, was definitely guys like Ed Reed, Troy Polamalu, and Brian Dawkins. I haven't watched as much film as on those guys because, you know, I guess the years of, you know, how many years they played ago. But as of right now, I'm studying all the top guys. I've been studying Earl Thomas since college. I studied Eric Berry, you know, Eric Weddle. I'm studying Michael Hyde right now. He's having a phenomenal year as well. So, you know, I watch film on everybody, try to, you know, still a little bit so I can put it in my toolbox.
You know, I can see that. I could see where you might take a little of something from everybody, but then there are certain things that you can't teach, right? There's certain instinctive things that you can't teach. Like Griffin said, you're always around the ball and you've got a knack, quote, "I don't think it's something you can coach." So obviously you've put in the time, but does some of this just come naturally, and is some of this just things that you cannot teach somebody?
Yeah, to be honest, I mean, I started all my career playing football on the offensive side. I really wasn't a defensive – I wasn't even a defensive-minded guy. I was a quarterback, went to the receiver. And I think that kind of helped my transition playing safety with, you know, kind of knowing and understanding certain route combinations and, you know, where receivers, what they're looking for as far as coverage and things like that. So it's definitely been helping my transition. I don't feel like this is something that you can coach. I think that when I watch other guys, watch other top safeties, I'm just trying to take a little bit from them and incorporate that within my game.
Kevin Byard, my guest. Kevin, you said at the very top that if these guys had seen me in college, they would know that I'm around the ball and I can make plays. You set school records with 19 career interceptions, 377 right. Interception return yards. You had 4 interception returns for TDs in Middle Tennessee State. So it's not exactly a surprise that you lead the league in interceptions. So what was your time at Middle Tennessee State like? And then how does it feel to be representing the school on the biggest stage?
I mean, it's awesome. It's just great. And the crazy thing about it is for me to play at Middle Tennessee and then get drafted by Nashville, well, the Tennessee Titans, to only drive 30 minutes up the street to Nashville, it's a blessing, you know, to stay around my fan base, and my family can still drive 3 hours up the street from Atlanta to come see my game. So it's a perfect situation. My time at MT was great. To be honest, I felt like, especially coming out, I was kind of, you know, overlooked a little bit. I mean, I had the stats, I had all those things, but, you know, John Robinson, you know, definitely took a risk on me and jumped on me and drafted me, and I appreciate him forever. And I told him that when he drafted me that, you know, he definitely didn't make a mistake.
Hey, listen, your energy and your motivation, your drive's always been off the charts, always been really, really high. But if you feel like that you were a little bit overlooked coming out of college, are those things even greater because of that?
Oh, of course. I think, you know, that kept the chip on my shoulder coming into the league, saying that, you know, some guys still don't think I may be the top safety in this draft class. So that just kept my motivation on wanting to work hard. And my motivation is always still to better myself. So I'm not really worried about, you know, other guys. I'm just worried about trying to better myself and keep trying to be the best safety that Kevin Byard can be.
Now, over the years, I've talked with guys like Arakpo and Woodyard about what it means to play Titan football. What does Titan football mean to you, and then how would you describe it? What is it exactly?
I would say, first of all, it's physical, you know, on both sides of the ball. We want to be physical. We want to be one of the most physically dominating teams. We want to be able to play at a level that other people can't play at, to, you know, because we're trying to win games. And I would say the next part is just together. You know, we have a special togetherness on this team that I think a lot of teams don't have. Just, I don't know if it's being a small-knit town or whatever, but, you know, we really enjoy being around each other in the locker room and in practice. And the last thing I would say is just together. You know, we just got a real togetherness about us.
So more is not better. Bigger is not better. And I made it clear, if you come in over 140, you're going to get hammered. You're going to get cut off. It's going to be savage. And it was. But in order for me to really make that point, it's one thing for me to say it, but it's another for you to hear it. Like when a caller gets run, LT comes in, and that caller knows he got run. The same thing needs to happen on Twitter. So I said, I'm going to involve you in the process. Give me some of your submissions or ideas. What's the best thing for a Twitter hammer? Alvin has seen some of this, and he's worked something up already.
Stop. Hammer time. Give me back my
140.
Too much down there, man.
It's pretty severe. Pretty savage. Now, to know whether or not that will work, and that might be too much of a good thing, Alvin. You might have gotten too ambitious with that. Let's read one and then see how it sounds. Let's see. We get thousands of ideas. I've taken them down. I need a bad tweet, a long tweet. So for that, I go to Denlesk's. Dear Jim, LiAngelo Ball will do fine with house arrest. I've been in 24-hour house arrest for years. Sincerely.
Stop. Hammer time.
Give me back my 140.
Too much down there, man.
Boy, there's a lot going on there, Alvin. If I'm not mistaken, I heard MC Hammer, I heard the Twitter Bird, I heard Mel Gibson, I heard The Situation saying one shot, I heard my man Mike Gundy with 40, Tori Hunter saying that there's too much down there, and Rachel's manual buzzer. Let me hear that thing together one more time.
Stop. Hammer time.
Give me back my 140.
Too much down there, man.
All right, so you got to explain some of these things to me. Why do we want give me back my son for a tweet that's too long? Like, give me back my 140? I would take that out.
Give me back my 140!
Give me back my 140. But the thing is, they don't want their 140. I guess that's me saying give me back my 140. All right.
Give me back my 140!
Wow, I see what you did there now. All right, I got to admit I didn't see it. I didn't hear it. Play it for me again in its entirety.
Stop. Hammer time.
Give me back my 140.
Too much down there, man.
Too much down there, man. The problem is when I don't think they're being too much
tweet. Too much down there, man.
I think about what he's saying. Too much down there, man. But it is Tori. If we can work Tori into it.
Too much down there, man.
This is where your brilliance is even working quicker than I am at this point. It might work. They've also got my against Rachel's And then as I start to kind of fade out, she comes in at the very end. Hammer, Twitter Bird, Gibby, Situation, Gundy, Tori, me, Rach.
Stop. Hammer time.
Give me back my 140.
Too much down there, man.
There might be too much down there, man. I don't know. I gotta see. There might be too much going on there. There might be too much down there. Thank you for listening. Have a tremendous day. Also, we had an amazing response to the Jim Rohn podcast with Green Beret, Nate Boyer. A new episode drops next Tuesday. Be on the lookout for that. Four down, one to go. The grind includes Friday. Check you then. I'm out.